Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Now available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner, going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions. Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together, the dulcet tones of David and Ryan, we bring you the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Pac-12 football, which is now dead. No more Pac-12 football, David.
We got to think of a new thing to say.
Yeah. Formerly Pac-12 football?
Yeah.
Is that simple enough for our brains?
Yeah.
It could be.
The once in future Pac-12?
Yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're going to recap the national championship game where Washington got smoked by Michigan. But, you know.
Okay. Let's start right there. They didn't get smoked. They lost by three touchdowns.
Okay.
But it was a one-score game in the fourth quarter.
So if you doubled their score, would they have won?
Look. At different points, maybe.
Yes.
Earlier in the game. But sure. Not at the final score.
Not
no.
at the final.
No. Certainly not the final.
But we're back. We're back in studio. And I just noticed this is the first time we're both in studio in the new year. Happy New Year from our studio. I think last show I was out in the desert with COVID. And so David ran that one. We're back in studio doing our regular thing across the podcasting platforms, Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, all that kind of stuff. If you do have the Apple podcasting app and or any of the apps and you want to leave us a rating and review, follow us, subscribe to the channel for Pac-12, the Pac-12 podcast, which will continue to be, continue to talk about former Pac-12 football teams. You can do that. And I don't know if we have any new reviews on the Apple podcasting app, David.
We have one new review.
Okay.
This is from Depot open hyphen. That's it. 5-star review. The best intro. This show has the best intro in the podcast universe. Please don't change it after the Pac-12 Network turns off the lights. It is a steep decline after the intro. Keep it mediocre, boys. 5 stars and go Dogs.
Oh, nice.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for that one. And so, if you're a podcast listener, that's awesome. We love it. But if you're streaming us live on our YouTube channel. That is great as well. We are live on our YouTube channel. We'll continue to do that, which is a lot of fun. We got a bunch of users in the chat. Shout out to Scott and Cam and Amy and West Texas Mike and everyone for coming in. I know more people join as we go. So thank you for doing that as well. You can reach us a number of different ways. Most of the time we get emails, pactofpodcast@gmail.com. You can call or text us at 424-532-0678. And then you can go to their website, pactofpodcast.com, or tweet us at Pac-12 Podcast. I haven't even looked at the emails, David. Do we have a bunch since the last show?
I don't think it's a bunch, but we've got a few.
Oh,
we got a couple.
We got a voicemail.
We got a handful.
I'm going to have to download this voicemail as we're going since came with this one hot. I have ants in my brand new kitchen.
In your pants?
Not in my pants. Hopefully not. But you start feeling them when you see the ants.
In your pants.
Kitchen remodel to the studs. And started getting some ants. And I don't even have that much food in there. I've like consolidated a lot of stuff. They were getting into like sealed peanut butter jars. It's insane.
That could be a coincidence rather than a... because it's very cold outside. When it's very cold outside, ants like to come inside.
Yeah, my neighbors, like we're in a townhome complex. Neighbors were getting some too. And I've put like traps outside, like figure they're coming in through the windows or whatever. So like in the dirt around, like in the plant bed. And I was like trying to kill them wherever I could. But I think they're actually coming through. My neighbor's like, I think they're coming like through the walls. So I'm getting more traps. I got to move the stove and put stuff behind there. I don't know. So I was dealing with that this morning. So I'm a little, I come in hot. I haven't looked at the questions or anything yet.
So the big thing, my apologies. The big thing is, and I know you're kind of a neat freak.
Very much.
When you put the traps out, the ones that like have poison in them.
Yes.
They have to carry it back to their homes. You also can't clean up the rat the little trail of bodies like that are there. You want to leave them so that they carry the bodies back too, because they'll often clean up their own bodies.
Oh, yeah. That's nice.
Yeah. So you want to do a little bit of that too. Like wait like, you know, 6 hours, maybe a full day if you can. If you can bring yourself to do it when they're trailing out of the little trap. But yeah, also bag up all your food. Put it all in Ziplocs instead of, you know, whatever you have them in.
It's the pantry, like I have, you know, like sugar and all that stuff. I bought like sealed containers for all that stuff. So all my flour, sugar, like all that stuff is in containers. And like, it's like a peanut butter jar that was just open, but just closed, you know, but I guess I'll have to put that.
Yeah, those screw top things aren't perfectly sealed.
No. I had honey because I used honey in my tea. Like they got into the freaking, that, like a big jar. I just threw it away. Like, son of a bitch. Honey's not cheap.
Yeah. Bag it all up. Ziploc. Ziploc will keep the ants out.
I bought like a spray that's like a minty spray, so it's like good for like the kitchen or food. But yeah, I'll spray them and kill them, and I'll just kind of leave them there for a little bit.
You're spraying them with a minty spray?
Yeah, it's like
this. I would worry that they'd be attracted to something like that.
No, it kills them.
Well, yeah, it might kill them, but they might be attracted to it.
Maybe it does. Yeah, I don't know.
You know, it's like fire.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, we got to.
Well, that was some home care conversation.
Yes,
for you all.
I think we need that kind of stuff.
Yeah, we do. Know? It's the off season. We are now officially in the off season.
Oh, I got to change up the graphic when we put it on the front page, because we have like our in season graphic.
I think that's next week. This is still covering an in season result.
Okay. Okay. Oh, Scott says apparently store bought traps don't work for carpenter ants.
I don't know if you have carpenter ants, though.
I'm not sure what they are. Do you see the little traps that have bait, and like, do you see them like in the trap, or do they
get I see them go in and then they go out.
Okay, so they don't stay in there. They're not like trapped.
No. The idea, so if you were trying to trap all of the ants that are likely in your house, right?
Yeah.
You would have hundreds of thousands of ants in a trap. Do you think they would fit?
Probably not.
No. Probably not. Do you think they would maybe get a little bit worried when they're walking up to the little trap to get their like delicious food and they see, oh, 90,000 of my brothers and sisters are dead. Oh, I'm going to try some too. No, I mean, so they take a little bit and then they bring it back home and then they spread it around all their friends and then it kills the queen, kills everybody involved.
Gotcha.
That's the design of a lot of those like poison filled traps, especially if you ever have cockroaches, that's also what they do.
Okay.
Like, you get those little traps and then they all get bombed. But you'll see them kind of congregate around it and then leave. And if you're doing it right, the problem should go away within a couple of days if you've got the right traps.
Sounds good. Oh, wait. We've got the wrong comment up here. Let me. West Texas Mike has a comment. A Pac-12 team played for a national title, and we're leading with home pest control. Yes. Is this your first day? Like, are you new here?
Yeah. Yeah. What,
like, you don't come here because we're going to lead with Washington in the national championship.
Because
game.
There's going to be, like, good and cogent conversation about football?
Yeah.
Are you out of your mind?
I don't get it, West Texas Mike, you know?
Yeah.
You're going to have to super chat just to get back in our good graces. So, okay. No, but thank you. I guess we could talk about this game. Michigan beat the Washington Huskies 34-13. Was that the final?
Yeah, 34-13.
Yeah. It was a game. We had really good.
Okay, you're clearly angered about this game because you picked wrong. Like, let's just put all our cards on the table.
Oh, no, no.
Like, you are angry about the result.
We went the same.
I don't care, though. You care.
You cared when you were beating me.
Sure, sure. No, no. But you care because you picked wrong. Like, no, that's no, why no, you're no, upset about Washington's performance.
I wanted Washington to win. Right. I was really before the game. I was like, the line was creeping up. I'm like, I think I should just bet on Michigan. Like, I literally was going to go against my pick. I wasn't shocked that this happened.
But I'm seeing Mark in here say horrible game as well. And so I
want to
reframe the narrative about this game, because
we had two really good games in the semifinals, and I just think this was kind of a cloak.
It wasn't a great game. It wasn't a really good game, but it was a one-score game in the fourth quarter, and Kalen DeBoer went into halftime saying some confident things, and it felt at that moment fully justified. That Washington was only down whatever it was, 7 at the half.
Yeah.
That they were only down 7 at that point in the game was startling and worrying for Michigan, because Michigan had dominated the game for most of the first half, and Washington still only had a one-score loss. And you're thinking, oh, you know, Penix at some point here, I got to just stop doing it because I'm not even making jokes about it anymore. Penix at some point is going to get it going, hit a couple throws, and this is going to be a game. Now, that didn't end up happening. They scored 3 more points after halftime, and it was – you know, over. But there was, I mean, there was a lot of, for a game that ended with a 3-score win for Michigan, there was some suspense. There was some drama for a lot of it. It's just what prevented it from happening was Washington's offensive players, like their star playmakers, played their C game, considering the defense they were going against. Like Penix, you know, we saw this a little bit in October and November where he got a little less accurate. And, you know, I think there was some speculation that he might have been dinged up. This was much more that Penix from the end of the season. And then his receivers were also not making plays the way they'd made plays against Texas, the way they'd made plays all year. And that result was like, you know, that's unfortunate. But a lot of it was dictated by Michigan's defense. Like, their defensive line was really impressive, put a ton of pressure on Penix and made it very, very hard for him to do anything. But they were always just one throw away. Like that holding call that prevented the deep sideline out to Odunze.
That was tough.
It was really tough, and it was like a turning point in the game.
Yeah.
Because if they make that throw, I don't know, maybe they get a little bit of because clearly confidence and like pressure on them, and like a lot of that was playing a role in how they're performing. If suddenly you hit a big play, maybe that shifts. Maybe that whole feeling shifts.
Those plays were like a dime a dozen before, and then they were just really hard to come by. And then you get one, and it gets taken away. I think it took a lot out of them, because you were like, finally break through. You're like, oh, yeah, we can – if you felt like they could do it again. Like, oh, we can make a bunch of these plays downfield. And that one gets taken away. You're like – I think it was deflating. I think that was like – it just seemed to die after that.
Super deflating. And like, look, Penix didn't play a good game. Like, that was a huge part of it. I mean, that the interception to start the second half.
Holy crap, was
it? Well, it was just, it's the kind of mistake that's just like, oh, you see a lot younger players making that mistake, because basically what it was is he didn't throw it far enough out of bounds. Like, I'm pretty sure it was a throwaway. I didn't see any of the commentary about it afterwards, but it looked like one. And he just didn't throw it hard enough.
Yeah.
And it's like, That's the kind of error. Like the other interception was just, you know, whatever, those things happen. But that one, it was just like, oh, come on, man. And not for like anybody else's sake, but like just you don't want to do that in your last college game. And that was deflating. It led to a Michigan field goal, which really was decisive. I mean, I know 17 points was already decisive, but that kind of put it over the top, you know, making it a two-score game at that point in the third quarter. And you already knew points were going to be so hard to come by against Michigan. That was really, really deflating. But I mean, there was a lot against Washington in this one. Dylan Johnson, I think he got hurt in the first quarter again.
No, it was – so he comes out, warms up, and they're, you know, Pete Thamel's reporting his injury status and all that, and they're saying he's 100%, he's ready to go. It was the first carry of the game.
Yeah.
6-7 yards, and then he gets, like, his ankle or whatever, like, kind of – was it stepped on or rolled on? I don't know. It wasn't good, and he's looked – you know, he's just looking like he's not himself anymore. You hurt the first play of the game, but they kept like trying to go to him. He came in and he was a lead blocker for a play. And I felt like they were running the ball way too much. It was almost like they were trying to prove that we can, they were trying to out Michigan early instead of being Washington.
I don't think it was so much that. I thought it was like a lot of how they played against Arizona. I think they had an idea about what Michigan was, and I don't know that it was necessarily wrong. I just think, given the nature of their team, they just had to be who they are. And if that means Penix is throwing, you know, he's 45% completions, but they're all bombs, then that's just the way it's got to be. Yeah. Because I don't, there was nothing to be gained on the ground in this game. I mean, Dylan Johnson,
trying to run it all the time.
To his credit, he played really, really hard and like clearly was gutting it out. And to gain whatever it was, I think he averaged like 3 yards a carry. He was 11 carries for 33 yards. To do that was impressive, honestly. Like, given how limited he was physically, he gained some tough yardage. But they shouldn't have been doing that. And they didn't to a large extent. But even like the 11 carries he got and the 20 total carries for the entire Washington offense, give 10 of those to Penix throwing the ball and just, you know, he's your guy and just go with what brung you.
Yes.
The thing was, and this is, I think they were searching for an answer. You know, there was a lot more around the line of scrimmage than you typically expect from Washington. They were having to dump off a lot. They were having to throw a lot of screens. That Michigan pass rush was devastating. Yeah. The fact that they could get pressure with four against this offensive line that had been so good all year, but they could consistently get pressure with four. Just, I mean, it put him so far behind just from the outset. And then Penix getting a ton of pressure the entire game. They would have had to play exceptionally well to overcome all that. And they didn't. They played, I think, collectively on offense, they played like their C+ game.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that's a huge problem. I do want to say, though, defensively, they stepped up huge because.
We'll get to defense in a second. But let's talk a little more offense if we can, and then do that. I did feel they tried to run the ball too much. There was a lot of stuff. They get the first time they got to, I think they got to the 10, and I believe they tried to run Dylan Johnson. They did some kind of end around or something. I mean, they were doing a lot that stuff where I see teams do this a lot, where there's a really aggressive defense that's like they're beating you on the line, and they're any line of scrimmage stuff is they're going to win. You have to kind of push it down the field a little bit to like. And they still throw the little screen passes behind the line of scrimmage. Like we saw Washington State doing that. Remember, was it Arizona State, whoever they played last year? And it was like, that's all they're doing is stopping the line of scrimmage crap. And you just keep doing it and you're not getting. And I felt like Washington was doing that. Like they didn't throw the ball downfield until 3rd and 8 on that. And they, you know, that would have been, you know, tie the game. I didn't really like deferring to the second half when you're an offensive team. Get out there and score. But whatever. But that, you know, that, and then it kind of got behind the eight ball there. But it seemed like they were trying to run the football like purposely instead of sling it downfield. And then when they were like, okay, we can sling it downfield, and then it wasn't clicking. That one time Odunze was, it was like fourth down, it was wide open. And then Penix just throws
missed
it
throw, and then it hits him in the hands too, but he still drops it.
Yeah, there was just a lot of that. And then,
I mean, there were a lot of throws like that, so we might not even be talking about the same one. There was also, I think, the McMillan screen that probably would have gone for 6, but he tripped over the defensive end.
Yeah. It was weird, too. They picked up a couple first downs early where it was like 3rd down, thrown behind the line of scrimmage or thrown short of the sticks, and one of the receivers, or I think even Dylan Johnson did once, like, make a great play to get the first down. You're like, that was really risky because you needed to keep this drive going. I think even on the first drive, like, there was stuff like that instead of the chunkier plays downfield. They were doing the short stuff, and Michigan would miss the tackle, which they don't do a lot. Then they were not missing the tackles later, yeah, and those plays weren't going for first downs.
And that's
downs.
Maybe
missed,
my
and Washington's punting.
And that was maybe my big takeaway from so much of the short stuff was it worked a little bit, but Michigan is too good of a tackling team,
yeah,
to do that extensively and have that be your base, because they will just choke the life out of you eventually. Like, there were so many open field tackles on Washington playmakers where, and the Michigan guys, I don't know what it is, but they're very strong. They're very good at being strong. There's a lot of similarities with Stanford, which I'm going to get to. But like the linebacker, who's both fast and very strong, I mean, who knows, would grab hold of the receiver, and the receiver would have all of the momentum, but the receiver wouldn't move.
Yeah.
And then he would be thrown down by the tackling linebacker. Obviously, just great strength and conditioning. But Michigan, they're just too good of a defense. They're too sound of a defense to think you can just consistently do that. I think you need to take advantage of what's the thing that makes Washington good. What's the thing that made them highly volatile? You know, they had some games where they were, you know, winning by the skin of their teeth, and some games where they blew teams out. But what is the thing that they built their offense around? Go bomb.
Yeah.
Like, just go bomb downfield and see what happens. And I think with the playmakers they have, doing that even more was probably the recipe for some version of success. And it was also the recipe for getting blown out. Like,
right,
that could have been the recipe for losing by 35. But I think it was also the only way they were actually going to win this game.
Yeah, I mean, you essentially got blown out, and you didn't do –
It wasn't a blowout.
Okay, well, it was pretty close. You didn't do what – you needed to do what got you there. Like, so the plays that – when you run the ball – so when you do what Michigan does – there's a mental tactic to this. Like, you know, when you're bombing in a war situation and the guys are in their shelter and just constantly, like, there's something that mentally you're like, oh my God, like, this is never going to end. When they're running the ball and they're moving the chains and you're never getting the ball back, like, it's draining. It's mentally sort of draining. But you could see the same thing happening to a similar defense in Texas the week before that. Up third and eight, like, most teams are going to be punting now. Holy shit, they just threw a 50-50 ball to Ndunze for, you know, and yep, he made the catch and they move in the chains. And it wasn't like, okay, that was their one shot. Like, that was like a – when you're like, they can just go downfield anytime they want, that's demoralizing too. Like, that's a different way to sort of demoralize a defense. And they never got that. Like, Michigan could play their, like, oh yeah, third and eight. Nobody picks that up, you know. That's second, yeah. So, I mean, you needed to kind of hit those plays and then sort of make Michigan rethink of, like, oh, we can't just, like, force a third and long and know that this is going to be the end. Like, they're not afraid to – they're not throwing a screen pass because it's safe and try to get more punt yards. Like, they're throwing it downfield on third and whatever and picking up first downs. And we just never saw that. So, I feel like they sort of got away from what their identity was. And you have to give some credit to Michigan's defense because they put Penix in, you know, weird situations. But I feel like Texas had some pressure. Penix mostly got away, and he would still make the play downfield. Michigan was the same thing. It was similar, but they just weren't able to kind of make that play. And you weren't. I think you made those plays early against Texas, and it built. And then you couldn't make those plays early against Michigan, and it's sort of like, oh, crap. I don't know if they're a much better defense. But up front, I think they're similar to what Texas was. I think they're better in the secondary.
Michigan's a ton better. They're one of the best defenses in, yeah, the last 5 years.
But they were just like it. You couldn't get those shots in early to sort of make it like, hey, this is legit. And I don't know if it was just they didn't have the self confidence to keep it going, or but they didn't die on the, you know, what got them there. Like they sort of like kind of tried to do a little bit of a mixture of what Michigan does, and what's like, I'd rather see them just huck it around and see what happens. And, you know, maybe you lose by another touchdown or two, but You also could win that way.
Yeah, I mean, with Penix playing the way he was, it was going to be hard. He needed to play his 95% game like he did against Texas, and he wasn't there. Like, it just it wasn't happening for him in this game. And a huge part of that was just that pass rush. You know, their defensive tackles specifically, just their ability to just knife through those guards and bowl them over and whatever. Mason Graham was awesome. SoCal native, Mason Graham, SoCal native, who grew up a UCLA fan, just letting everyone know. UCLA, did they offer him?
I'm sure they did.
How many times did he camp at UCLA hoping for an offer, by the way? It was twice. It was twice. It was two different times. And they said, nah, now we're good. But was he like low rated? Was he like a 2-star or something? And Michigan just found a diamond in the rough? No. He was a 4-star. He was a top 247
player.
Why offer
that guy?
Why offer him? Why offer a local defensive tackle? They grow on trees in California.
Well, he probably grew up a USC fan, right?
No. Grew up a UCLA fan,
really?
Wanted a UCLA offer.
Oh, wow.
Mm.
That seems...
Yeah. Anyway, just a little side note, just a little something, just a little data point. It was that pass rush was the equalizer, and it always is in college football. If you have the ability to get pressure with four on a quarterback, you're going to be pretty good on defense. And this game was, it was a dominant effort from Michigan. Can we talk about that offense, though, and what Washington was able to do defensively?
Yeah, early on, obviously, it was the second and 14 play. Was it Donovan Edwards? They, you know, it's like, oh, you feel like, okay, Washington's going to make a stand here. You get Michigan behind the sticks. It's a lot different than getting Washington behind the sticks. And you hand it off to Donovan Edwards, his first carry of the game. And he goes into the line on second and 14. It looks like he's not going anywhere. But it was really his own linemen that were in his way and not any Washington defenders. And then he bounces it outside. And it's a whatever 50-yard touchdown or whatever it was. And then you're like, uh-oh. Like, at that point, you're like, His first two carries went for two long touchdowns. He hadn't been doing much lately. So when you're like kind of guy that hasn't been contributing that much, gets like two touchdowns on two touches, that was going to be a problem for Washington. I think they got better later in the game. But early on, they had a hard time stopping the run.
Yeah, a huge problem stopping the run. Like, it looked like when you watch the all 22 angle, it was they weren't. Like, it looked like they were trying to account for the gaps, and they didn't have a good plan for what Michigan was trying to do offensively, like how they were, you know, moving guys around, like overloading the line, all that kind of stuff. And so there would just be a gap that was not accounted for, and, you know, they would blast it for a huge gain. And there were multiple chunk plays in the first half, and then in the second half, they were a lot more sound. And kind of the, like, schizophrenia of Washington's play this year, but also specifically on defense, they just started playing better, too. Like, their defensive line started getting off blocks and making plays more. And that was not happening at all in the first half. And then suddenly it was happening in the third quarter. The defense played good enough in that stretch to keep them in and just give this offense a chance, which has been like the recipe for success for this defense all year. You know, just hang around. Just be good enough that the offense can go out in there and bomb. And it just never happened. But big thing I want to note, and this is about Michigan and their similarity to 2010 Stanford. That fucking team holds all goddamn day long, and they never get called. Not one goddamn time, Ryan. One time. They didn't get called one time for offensive holding, and they were holding game.
Is it a Harbaugh thing?
I mean, I'm sure he teaches his offensive linemen to hold. Like, I think any good offensive line coach should be teaching you how to hold and in what ways you can get away with it. And then I think some of it is reputational. I think some of it is, who knows. But there were like so many egregious holds in this game that were just uncalled. And I think, you know, it made it tougher
when Washington got that call.
Yeah. And that one was like, okay, he sort of clotheslined him for a second, but then didn't do anything, like the right tackle. But I will say about that right tackle, there was an odd sequence of plays, I want to say deep into the second half, where suddenly Washington snaps were super messed up. They were coming really early, or they were coming a little too late. And their right tackle, he got called for a false start one time, and then he false started again on the next two plays, but they didn't call it. And then on the fourth play, I think this was the fourth down where whatever, Washington failed. I can't remember the exact circumstances. He didn't move, like, off the snap. And it was like, is the noise, is it so loud there? Or was something messed up with what they were trying to do with their snap counts late in the game? Were they trying to do, like, a lot of drawing off sides and it was messing everyone up? But that last snap, it was like it caught Penix by surprise, too. So there was just a lot of stuff where it was just Washington wasn't sharp. Like, they weren't at their best, and they needed to be. Like, if they were going to beat this Michigan team, their A-plus game does it. Maybe their A game does it. But anything less than that wasn't going to do it, and they were not there.
I think it would have been a good game, even like a B-plus game or an A-minus game. I think it would have been a lot. You could... I think you needed to play a little bit better to put some sort of pressure on Michigan to do something outside of what they can do in their sleep, which that's what they were doing. I mean, if you can hand it off on second 14 and get a touchdown, that's a problem. I think they could have – I don't know if they needed a game or whatever to win this one. But I feel like it was a really poor effort. And some of it's Michigan, and some of it was just Washington didn't play very well. That happens. They're a bunch of – 21-year-old kids or whatever, and they play that well. There was one you were talking about, like the false start stuff, and I think this was like Kalen DeBoer. I want to talk about pianos and stuff too, but I think this was a Kalen DeBoer sort of play where all the offensive linemen were like standing up, like when you make the quarterback is like calling out the protections and stuff, and maybe changing the play. So it looked like you were in that area where you're getting ready to get set to hike the ball, but you're nowhere near ready to hike the ball yet. And they hiked the ball. The offensive alignment, like half of them, they're like standing up looking around, if you remember this play or not. And then they hiked the ball and it was like a quick pass. And so I think it was like a tight end over the middle or something. But it looked like it was like snapping it before it looked like you were ready, but like the center and Penix were ready.
Yeah, and it was a good way to steal a first down at that point.
Yes, it felt like they stole a first down. Like that was a good Kalen DeBoer play. We didn't see a lot of that, but there was some of that. Any issues? Were there any pianos falling on any heads? I would say like DeBoer ran the ball too much, and Michigan shouldn't have thrown the ball 18 times.
No, I honestly didn't see a coaching failure, really. I mean, we can nitpick about that sort of stuff, but it wasn't like horrible decision was made. I honestly thought DeBoer called a pretty good game. That that sequence where they scored the touchdown, where they ran the ball with Penix first, maybe you score on that play, but also run the clock a little bit more and then, you know, go with your bread and butter on fourth down at the goal line was exactly the right way to play it, because you don't want to give Michigan another chance to score at the end of the half. So I thought like there was a lot that was good with what he was doing. I thought he recovered from his piano incidents against Texas in the closing minutes. I'm not a big blame the players guy, but I think it was, you know, Penix and his receivers were just, they were not at their top tier game. And that was really the story of the game. I think the defense played well enough. It should have been good enough. 34 points really does not tell the tale of what the defense was able to do in that second half.
Yeah.
And it was, it was just a matter that the offense could never, ever come unglued from Michigan's defense.
Yeah, that middle eight, because like Michigan gets, Michigan goes for it on fourth down. I think they were going to kick a field goal. I'm like, are you kidding me? You got to try to put it, So Michigan's going, like there's like a minute and a half left or something, and Michigan's, maybe like the 30, I forget exactly what it was, but the end of the second half, the second quarter, and they're going to kick a field goal. Then they call timeout and they decide to go for it, which is the right call. Like you should just like you can put, Washington away. You're up 14 at this point, and you could put them up, 17 matter, but you can go up three touchdowns and you're going to take them out of this game. I had no problem. It was like fourth and three, but they end up throwing a pass instead of you could just hand the ball off at that point, but whatever. And then Washington gets the ball, they score, right? And it's a 7-point game going to halftime, and they get the ball back. So, like, there was a lot of sort of momentum there. So, I agree with you. I think the defense did enough to, like, hey, make the plays when you need to, keep it close. Hey, offense, you've been doing this all year. Go do your shit. And they didn't do it. But I want to give credit to, if you watch Washington's defensive backfield, now there were some marquee plays like the end of the Texas game and stuff like that. But I felt they did a really nice job in the secondary defending passes. Even the line, they had a linebacker on one of the Michigan's best receivers, and he makes the play. Like, they were good at not just being in the right position, but making a play on the ball. We've seen that. Just, it's not easy to do. I think that's what it looked like, a well-coached defensive backfield for Washington, that when the play was there, like, they were able to make a play on the ball. And I thought the Washington secondary played pretty well.
For the most part, again, I don't like calling out specific guys. Number seven had some major issues. And one of the late completions for, I think he was a safety, might've been a dropping linebacker, but, one of the late completions where it was to the, I think their tight end, catches the ball, and then he like is kind of jumping in the background for some reason, and the guy just scoots out to the right sideline and goes way down the sideline.
Yeah,
might have even scored on that one. But I think, you know, we've seen some bad play from the secondary this year, and I thought it was actually fine for the most part in this one. But there were just some mess ups. But again, like, broadly speaking, you know, that first half was bad, and I think you could make an argument that no team is ever going to win a game where they allow 300 yards rushing. But the second half, I mean, they held them close enough. If the Washington offense plays anything like its, you know, median play, it's a game. I don't know if they win, but it's a game. Yeah. And it just, they didn't come close.
And by the end, Penix was banged up. He looked like, you know, he just looked like he was beat up there. And sort of was like when you needed his magic, like, if he had his magic going early, it would have been one thing, and you could kind of hang on. But once you were like behind like that, and then he's banged up, it just wasn't good. What did you think of, and West Texas Mike put this in the chat, even the Huskies' good luck charm, Dan Lanning, was in the building. And there was a bunch of jokes where like, hey, Dan Lanning finally got to see Washington lose in person and stuff like that. But he was there. I thought he did a pretty good job when he was doing the TV commentary and stuff. Any thoughts on your boy Dan Lanning's?
I mean, I thought it was a really odd choice.
Yes. It's like Ryan Day being on there.
Well, it's one thing to have like a kind of a seasoned vet head coach doing it.
Yeah.
Like, because they can kind of have fun with it. But I mean, I didn't see him having much fun with the idea of it. I thought he was pretty good analyzing the game.
Yeah, I thought he was
but,
good.
But I don't know. It's just like kind of a weird choice. Like, there's a lot of head coaches you could ask to do that. And you're asking the guy who's lost like three straight 3-point games to this team, and main rival and all that kind of stuff. I don't know. Like, it's one thing to ask Nick Saban to talk about Georgia, because like Kirby Smart's also his protege, among many other things.
Yeah.
But this is just like a rival talking about a rival. And I do think,
and only 2 years of experience.
And if I was Washington, I'd be a little bit pissed about it, because this is your showcase. Like, this is your opportunity to recruit for your program and showcase your program. And they ask Dan Lanning to be, you know, talking throughout the entire program, and he gets to sell himself during that entire period. I'd be kind of pissed if I was Kalen DeBoer in Washington. Like, they're still rivals. Like, they're still going to go forward in the Big Ten as rivals. Like,
yeah,
they're competing against each other. So I thought it was just kind of stupid. He was fine. I mean, he's clearly a sharp guy, and he clearly knows football, but I just thought it was weird, and he wasn't fun enough to like make it like super interesting.
Yeah,
he was like, I think, clearly a little bit nervous, like doing it all, but yeah, he was fine.
Yeah, what if it was like Ryan Day? Like, would Harbaugh be like, what the hell is Ryan Day?
Right,
doing?
Right.
Well, Ryan Day at least has like more experience and stuff, and like had beat Harbaugh, but lost the last three. Similar, you know. But I feel like it would be very similar. Like, yeah, I don't know what. I thought he was fine on TV, but I'm not sure why you would bring him in. Just maybe it's like, here's the insider Washington perspective from an opponent that wasn't able to beat him, why they're good or whatever. But yeah, I thought that was kind of interesting.
Right.
Anything else? Did you watch it on delay?
No. So I was watching a little bit. I was kind of lying. I was watching a little bit while I was at my daughter's swimming session. So I was watching on my phone.
Okay.
So I missed, I don't know, probably 5 minutes of game action between driving back and forth. So I caught most of it, but I wasn't watching on TV until it was 17-3.
Okay.
But no, I watched the whole game.
Yeah, it was nice. I had a few people over, made dinner, and yeah, what was Willow worried about, like, doing stuff in the kitchen while this was going on? But then it wasn't that much of a game later on. But yeah, it's like, so don't want to be down the dumps on Washington. What Kalen DeBoer was able to do, I mean, they were visibly upset, obviously very emotional after this game. 14-1 is pretty freaking amazing. Just an amazing run his first 2 years at the helm. He's just 1-1-1 everywhere he's been. I feel like this is a, you know, they're going to have a lot of momentum going in to the Big Ten. They get to play Michigan again in October. So that'll be kind of cool to see that. But, the Pacific Northwest schools came into the Big Ten sort of scenario late, but both of them had really good seasons. And I feel like they're going to give themselves as good a shot as any to compete in a, you know, a really tough conference in the Big Ten and kind of bring a little West Coast swag to this Midwestern football. But yeah, you got to give props to what Kalen DeBoer was able to do. Yeah, they had some clunker games. They should have lost Arizona State. There's a lot of weird stuff that happened, but there's something to be said for getting those victories. And even though most of your wins were close wins, you still won them. You won them all. And you just didn't play well in the last game. I don't think that they were like significantly worse than Michigan, but they did not play well at all. You needed to play well to get that win. But I give props to Washington. They had a great season.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's obviously a little bit of a reloading that needs to happen now with Penix going to the NFL. Adunze too, I think. Kalen DeBoer just wins games. He'll find a way to win some games.
Yeah.
That seems like a very confident bet at this point. And to go from 2 years ago being in the dregs of the Jimmy Lake era to very close to on top of the world, best coaching job in recent memory.
For sure.
Yeah. So really impressive. Really impressive.
Brian Wood said, love the graphic during the game. Most rushing yards surrendered in a national championship game. All Pac-12 teams. Good. Go out in style. Yeah. I mean, I think the Pac-12 sort of like, even though it lost the championship game, you still went out in style. They were there. You know, they were in there in that final group where, a lot of the other conferences weren't. Dog's Life in Portland. It felt like after the first sack, Penix was throwing above his receivers frequently. Yeah, he did seem to be throwing high, and that that sack, it was a four-man rush, and he hadn't been sacked. He didn't get sacked against Texas. You know, he got pressure, but that sack seemed to kind of get to him a little bit, and maybe it banged him up too. I don't know.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, good stuff, everybody. Why don't we do this? Let's take a quick break, and we will come back and do some questions. So back in a minute, everyone.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
All righty. We're back here on the podcast of champions. Put a bow on our picks for the 2023 college football season. Both David and I took Washington plus five. We were both incorrect. So I go 6-3 in the bowl season, and David goes 2-7. That was enough for me to take a one-game lead and win the season total against the spread. I was 51-40-1, and David was 50-41-1. I think both still good efforts. You were 9 games above .500. I was 11. Both would have won you a little bit of money if you bet throughout, and I did. Throughout the season, thanks over to my bookie. Thanks to them. It was a lot of fun putting the games. I almost, David, put, I was like, okay, the line moved up. I think when I bet on my bookie, it was 4.5.
Mm-hmm.
It went up to 5.5. So I almost went in like, should I do another bet? And I was like, you know, I didn't want to pull the trigger because I just felt like, I think Michigan's going to win, you know? So I didn't do it. But I've had a lot of fun betting everything over at my bookie. Done it all year. We've done it for years. And just put a little juice on the games, you know, not bet very much, but just trying to put some money behind where my mouth is when we make the picks. So thanks to my bookie for kind of making that happen and allowing that to happen all year. They got a lot of fun stuff over there. You can bet, you know, if you want to bet the NFL playoffs, you want to bet baseball season coming up, the NBA, NHL, whatever you want to do, you can do that over at my bookie. Of course, I had a lot of fun doing Pac-12 football. That's mostly what I've been betting over there, but you can go check it out. If you do, if you're a first-time user, you can use the promo code Pac-12 to get a cash bonus. So promo code Pac-12, go check it out over at my bookie. So get over there, check out all the different deals that are going on, and you have a good time. You can bet anything, anytime, anywhere over at my bookie.
Lovely read.
Thanks.
Top tier. One of the best reads I've ever heard in my life.
Just off the cuff.
It's just incredible. The true professionalism, the absolute work ethic. You are an otherworldly person.
Thanks. I know you don't care, but that concluded our picks for the year. So,
sad.
How are we going to do our picks? What about next year? Like, because now we're going to have teams in different conferences. Do we just still pick? Because there'll be a lot more games. I don't know if we're going to do it the same way. Any thoughts on that?
I think we still pick all of the Pac-12 teams. In their respective games.
It'll feel a lot like the out-of-conference games where you got like 11 games.
Yeah, we're going to be talking a lot. I don't know. So what I was thinking on the drive over from like a planning perspective, even just for the off-season, I think we got to do deep dives on each program, kind of the way we did 6 or 7 years ago when we did like the structural discussion about each program. But also, like, what's the outlook? Like, what do you think you can do in your new league? What's the actual potential for it and all that kind of stuff? But, like, I was thinking about that, and I was like, that's going to be fun and interesting. But then planning for, like, talking about all these teams during, you know, the season and all this kind of stuff. And are we going to be tempted ever to talk about, like, the key other Big 12 games or the key other Big 10 games or, you know, what have you. So, I don't know. Seems like a lot.
Yeah. Uncle Bill in the chat says, the in-stadium videos were miss after miss. They were all about year 10 of the playoffs and showed a lot of Buckeye and Duck highlights. All the sky pianos on those jabronis.
Yeah.
So they didn't. Yeah. And then we had, let's see, drag racing duelist. I'm a Husky hater, but the refs sure allowed Michigan DBs to grab a lot and be extremely physical. Am I the only one who noticed that? Did you notice that? I noticed it more on the lines, I thought, than.
Yeah. Yeah. I think to some extent, sure.
Amy says, are you going to be feeling confident placing bets on teams you don't know? We do this all the time. Like,
I mean,
I don't know if we know these teams.
I don't, yeah. I mean, like, the thing is, we're going to get a feel for it. This is what I was talking about is, you know, we cover USC and UCLA for our jobs. Part of the value of doing this originally was that it got us more familiar with the other programs in the league and got us paying attention to them more.
It's helped me a lot in my regular job.
And I don't know, like, specifically for us, how tempted we're going to be to, I mean, I'm never going to be tempted to watch Iowa Rutgers or whatever.
No.
But I don't know, like, Penn State, Michigan, I might, like, have to pay attention to that.
I mean, I watch that anyway. Like, you don't, but
no,
I would.
Why would you?
Because it's good.
No, but there's something else on.
True.
Some Pac-12 related action. We're just going to have a lot of divided responsibilities because we also have to watch a bunch of Big 12 games now. We have to watch a bunch of ACC games now. We have to watch some Pac-2 Mountain West action.
Yeah.
There's just, I mean, there's a lot of demands
now. The depth of knowledge, I'm not saying is very, we're talking puddle, right? But it's going to be worse. It's like a dry.
No, we're gonna be like little droplets on the ground. So I don't know. It's gonna be tough. But we're gonna do it. We're gonna do the job for you, the people out there in the world.
But we'll still cover those Pac-12 teams or former Pac-12 teams, whatever
you want
to
call.
We got a voicemail. I haven't listened to it yet, but I did download it while you were talking. Here you go.
What's up, guys? It's Perk. Just with the last game of kind of the Pac-12 as it was and with how things have ended. Dave, you had mentioned a lot in the past that, and I agree with it, that the Pac-12 would be in a different spot had the league performed better and had some more teams made the playoff and you know, really competed on a national level. With that being said, is there a result over the last, I guess, in the playoff era, but even going back to the last years of the BCS, is there a result that you guys think that if it goes differently, maybe helps out the Pac-12 continuing to exist today? Is it Oregon's national championship run and they're in the first playoff? Is it really anything specific that could stand out to you guys? Thanks, guys. Hope you had a great Christmas and Happy New Year.
I don't think there's any result that changes. I don't think there was any problem with Oregon making it all the way to the title game in 2014 and then losing. I don't think there was any problem with Washington being semi-competitive for a half against Alabama and then losing. I don't think there was any problem with the result this year. The problem was going 7 years in between. Or seven or six. It was 2017, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22. Six. Going 6 years in between, not making it. And that's, you know, that's the biggest issue. And it shouldn't have been. I think everyone, if they'd had a little bit more, I don't know, perspective, not to sound like George Klyavkov, but it was a very, very down period for the Pac-12. A lot of bad coaching hires were made during that period. A lot of bad administrative decisions were made during that period. And it was just a down period.
Like, yeah.
And those happen in all sorts of leagues. They happen everywhere. And it coincided with a media deal. It coincided with this, you know, crunch of teams going different places. And it was horrible timing. It was just horrible timing to not have your best foot forward, because we saw this past year, Pac-12 was pretty damn good. And it's, if it was once again, a thing next year, it would probably be pretty damn good again.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good program management going on right now in the league. You've got Oregon doing their thing. I mean, they're recruiting at a top five level consistently now, which is crazy. You've got USC with Lincoln Riley. As much as, you know, we all make fun of the defensive coordinator situation, still, outlook is probably still pretty positive. You got Washington, obviously, just went to the title game. You've got Arizona with Jed Fish, clearly on the rise. You've got Utah doing its consistent thing in the mountains. There are so many things to point to that say, oh, okay, this league's, you know, in really good shape, but it doesn't exist now. And that's the part that I think it's a lot of short-term thinking from a lot of people. I think UCLA and USC really fucked this up for everybody. And by everybody, I do mean themselves as well. And I think the end result is going to be worse for college football and worse for these schools. But, you know, some executives in charge of these schools get to say they did a big deal that made millions of dollars. And that's all they care about.
No, I agree. I think like USC and UCLA being bad definitely didn't help. And I know some other schools were sort of like celebrating the fact that that whatever LA powers or whatever were down, but you kind of needed them to be good for the conference. And people were like, oh, Utah's been better. It's like, yeah, Utah's been a better team. Oregon's been a better team. But who did the Big Ten want? They wanted the LA schools. And the fact that those schools stunk for a very long time and had bad hires and all that stuff really sort of hurt the conference. So there was a lot of like kind of dancing on their graves, but you sort of needed those guys to not be terrible. And they were terrible.
Yeah.
So I think that was a big part of it. I think it's the first email from Amy.
Yeah. So new conference boundaries from Amy.
Okay.
Let's have some fun. Let's say the conferences are based on time zones, you know, keep everything geographical. So our four conferences are Eastern, Central, Mountain, including the Arizona schools, and Pacific, including Hawaii. The winner of each conference goes to the semifinals, and then who goes to the finals to win based on this year's games. Loving the excellent audio since going live and keeping it mediocre. All right. So, out of the West, you would have to say Washington.
I would say Oregon because, like, you know, I'm watching those games.
And clearly they won even though they didn't.
Yeah, they were way better.
Yeah, like, clearly it's Oregon. aside from those pesky results on the field,
right.
Clearly it's Oregon.
Oregon's better.
Oregon's just simply better.
Yes.
And they've been better for 2 years than Washington's
Oregon
specific.
Ducks.
No, we're going to do
Washington Huskies.
Beat that ass 3 times in a row.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's Washington out of the West. Out of the Mountain, let me see where the Mountain time zone cuts off. Hang on. I want to see how deep into Texas it cuts off. Mountain time zone, give it to me in a map. Okay, they've got like West Texas. I don't think they get Oklahoma. I mean, it might be Utah, or it might be like something crazy like South Dakota State or something. No, they're not in it. Oh, it would be Arizona. Yeah, Arizona. Yeah. Duh. Okay, so Arizona. So Washington and Arizona are both.
I think she was trying to fish in to make Utah win the.
Yeah, no, but it's Arizona.
I think it's
so Arizona. You've got Washington and Arizona making a playoff in this system already, yeah. So I'm loving it already. Out of the Midwest.
Hold on, we got to do.
Arizona Wildcats.
Since I got that, yeah.
Out of the Midwest, I think you've got to go Texas, right? I mean, it could be Alabama, but they beat them. So Texas.
Yeah, I think Texas.
And then out of the East, it's Michigan. So what
is
we end
Michigan
up with.
Central?
What we end up with.
Is Michigan Central?
No, they're in the East.
Okay.
What we end up with, boys and girls, is the exact same playoff except Arizona gets in.
Hmm.
You like that? Arizona gets in over Alabama. All is just in the world.
I like that.
Yeah. You'd have Washington playing Texas again, beating them. You'd have Arizona playing Michigan, obviously beating them. You know, Jed Fish knows all about that Michigan program. And then it's Washington, Arizona, as God intended in the national championship game.
I know you don't really care.
Correct,
about,
right?
Correct.
Obviously. Yeah,
okay. I like it. I'm really glad. Like, if you watch that Michigan-Alabama game, like, Harbaugh had a piano fall on his head. Like, they were down. Like, that they were very lucky to win that game. They had to convert a 4th-and-2. Alabama could have easily and probably should have won.
I'm very glad it was Michigan that did that to Washington rather than Alabama.
Billion.
Do you know how insufferable
how gross
it
would have been?
Because the thing is, Michigan, we can all be like, okay, whatever, cheating, whatever, all that kind of stuff. At least they haven't won the stupid thing since 97.
Right.
Like, we can at least say, oh, a new team won.
It's like Alabama, like, on the year that they screw up, they needed a fourth and 31 conversion to beat Auburn, and they still win the national championship. I'd be like, oh, my God, this is so fucking gross, but it's way less gross to have Michigan win.
Yeah, no, I think we can all support this, you know, once we get past the sorrow.
Yeah, okay, let's see. Next up, Frank, I think he gave a prediction. Michigan 31, Washington 21.
I think that captures the tenor, even if not the exact score. So good job, Frank.
He was pretty close. Yeah, he like a graphic with some of the recruits and stuff. Roster talent. That was cool.
Oh, Ryan has a great question.
Okay.
Cowards? Michigan ducked their September 2023 game at UCLA. Is their 2023-24 championship legitimate?
Well, they're the first
if
team.
If you duck UCLA
to
pad your resume, pad that record, and you win a national championship, I think you put an asterisk next to that thing.
Especially because Harbaugh wouldn't have been coaching for the game.
Michigan asterisk ducked UCLA.
I mean, Harbaugh didn't coach half of their regular season games. Like, how
you don't just go into the Rose Bowl
and get a win without Harbaugh,
unless you're Arizona State.
They did that. Yeah,
They did that.
No, I do like that.
I love it.
There will be some talk. And do you think Harbaugh stays? Do you think he's going to the NFL? Do you care?
I don't care.
Yeah, didn't think so. I kind of think he goes to the NFL.
Who cares?
He's probably going to be suspended for half the games next year too. All right, last one. National title beatdown, Lincoln Riley's fault, from Brian. Good evening, Ryan and Dave. Can we blame Washington's loss tonight on Riley for firing Grinch? Clearly, that started a chain of dominoes, which allowed DeBoer to hire him to coach Washington's run fits in the first quarter. That run defense was so bad, it literally felt like somebody had body swapped USC's defense for Washington's. Being oh so close, but not winning at all, is a fitting end for this conference. Thanks for the history lessons, Dave, and all the work on the podcast this year, Ryan. Fight on and go, Beavs.
Yeah, I will say there must have been some wrinkle that I wasn't getting, because you had to expect that Michigan was going to go with big lineups with, you know, some tight ends out there, but they were just not like matching up the gaps well at all. Like, you could see the confusion on Washington's defense, and it was like, did you guys not game plan for this?
Yeah.
And there's probably some nuance that I was missing, but they just didn't look like they'd been prepared for it. And then there was an adjustment, clearly, because they started being a lot more sound in their gap responsibilities, but very peculiar in that first half.
And we have one question on YouTube in the chat. Thanks, everyone, for watching and listening on the chat. Kevin says, Pete Carroll's out as Seattle's head coach. Thoughts on him coming back to USC as co-head coach? He does defense and Riley does offense. No, he's 72. Like, trying to to bring back the past.
John Robinson too.
Yeah.
John Robinson too.
It's like, no. I mean,
Pete Carroll too, baby. Let's do it.
No, he's... I kind of surprised that he was out. It sounded like he wanted to come back. They did miss the playoffs like two of the last 3 years. But, I mean, they look kind of crappy, like getting rid of Russell Wilson. But there was the smart move. Like, they were better off getting rid of, which didn't, you know, wasn't really sure if that was going to be the case. I just saw that this broke this morning. I haven't seen anything much else about it. But, no, you don't bring him back. Like, can he be a consultant or something? Or what? I mean, like, you want him to be around the program and say hi and stuff. But no, not a co-head coach. No. No.
You sound iffy about this.
No, that's just dumb. Whether people are like, hey, bring Ed Orgeron in as the defensive coordinator. Okay, well, no. Two, no. Three, he's never been a defensive coordinator before. No. You know, like, if you want Ed Orgeron to be around and give a speech or something, that's fine. Like, even if you wanted to bring him back as like a defensive line coach or something, I don't care. But you can't just because you knew that, like, you this is what got USC into trouble for so many years. Like, instead of going hiring somebody that's really good, let's hire someone we know. Because, like, oh, yeah, that could work. We know him. And it's like, no. Like, that's not.
Well, and I will say this, and like, not, this isn't even denigrating or drawn for like being like a bagman type recruiter, but what NIL has done is has smoothed out a lot of the like being an elite recruiter still matters,
but not as much.
But it doesn't matter as much. What matters is how many bags you're holding. And I think Orgeron can charm some people. He can do the whole thing, but it's not what it once was. So, you know, when you're hiring position coaches, now it makes much more sense to hire really good technical position coaches.
Yeah.
Because your recruiting a lot of times is just contract negotiations.
It's funny, like the recruiting story I'll tell, like for Orgeron, I think that was like 2009. So he had been fired by Ole Miss, and I was at the Mobile, Alabama, the Senior Bowl. Mm-hmm. USC had like nine guys in there, like John David Booty and a bunch of dudes. Joe Flacco was there. He was like coming out of Delaware. He was in the Senior Bowl, a bunch of dudes. Deshaun Jackson's family walks by. I'm talking to Orgeron. And why is someone like a good recruiter? Like, I go up to him, like, hey, Coach, Ryan Abraham, I run USCFootball.com. We've interviewed a few times. And he's like, I know you, Ryan. Like, he knew, like, all the stuff about me. Like, I hadn't seen him for years, but he remembered and was, like genuinely happy to see you. He was a very engaging person. Like, very good. Like, politicians have this kind of thing where you remember names, you remember all this stuff. Deshaun Jackson's family walks by. He goes to Cal. He was committed to USC, ends up going to Cal. They were, like, gushing. Like, they couldn't have been more excited to see anybody than they saw Ed Orgeron. Like, that's the kind of impact he had on people. That, why are you such a great recruiter? Like, you were just this engaging person and they just love him. And I think you're right. Like, that matters and that definitely helps. But NIL is such a huge part of recruiting now. I don't think it matters as much. But seeing him work, you could say, why is that guy a really good recruiter? Just because, like, just the interaction with people that still came down to relationships, and he was just very good at that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And that stuff just doesn't matter as much anymore.
No. All right. Well, thanks everyone in the chat, and happy new year, and RIP to Pac-12 football.
Yeah. Pour one out for the league.
I don't think I have any beers in the fridge. We could have shot a tequila or something. Or
wasn't always good, but it was always there.
Yeah. It wasn't always there either, especially the beginning. Remember the beginning? Like, we would go months without recording and stuff too?
Yeah, yeah.
And we were still the number one Pac-12 podcast.
I remember, like, when I moved to Georgia, we recorded once in January, and then we didn't record again until, I want to say, August.
It was like no spring football.
Nothing. And then it was like, oh, want to do this still? Okay, let's do it.
Yeah.
We've been pretty consistent since then.
We're doing two a week, which is a lot of freaking work for like...
We started out doing that back in 2015, if I remember correctly, but then we stopped doing that very quickly.
Because we were like, holy crap, that's hard.
And then it was hard, even at our advanced age, where it's all just autopilot. We're not even paying attention to the words we're saying.
No. Yeah. The preparation.
There was a time when I was nervous doing this. I'm like, oh, God, my voice out there for thousands of people. And then it just dies. Like, that nervousness just goes away.
Do you remember when we were part of Scout, we went into the Fox, like, studios and recorded this.
Yeah, yeah. Like, at a desk, like, just an office desk.
Yeah.
Sitting across from each other.
Equipment.
And staring each other in the eyes.
So I must have had, maybe I didn't have this podcast studio yet.
You didn't yet. No. That didn't come until, what, 2017, probably?
Yeah, maybe. But then I had... Yeah, because I got a smaller one, and then this one's a bigger one, so we could do more video stuff in here. It's definitely nice because we just have a place, it's set up. You just come in and start recording. But
yeah, I'm glad I invested so much in this place.
Yes, thank you. We used to go into that Fox lot. We had like a little, I think I still have the key card somewhere.
Didn't have a key card. I had to wait for your ass.
You didn't have a key card?
I didn't have a key card.
Oh.
Yeah. And it was great as, like, I think it was, like, in the middle of, like, them shuttering that office. And
yes.
So there would be just fewer and fewer people in there every time we would go in until it was just us and that one executive. And that was it in the entire office.
Yeah, because it was, like, Scout was in there, but then Scout was sort of, like...
an offshoot thing.
Yeah, it was really weird.
Yeah.
Amy says, it's sad listening to your goodbyes. It's good. It's been a good run. We're still going to be around.
We're going to be back next week. We also got to set that up. I'm thinking we start doing our off-season things now, like just the structural things about how they're going to do in their new setups.
Okay. Alex said he sent in a short email this morning. I didn't see an email.
We didn't get shit, Alex.
Maybe. Oh, maybe is it in one of the other...
Sometimes it goes into promotions or spam.
Yeah, I didn't see.
I don't see anything in spam, and I don't see anything in promotions. It didn't come.
Sorry.
You're a liar.
I'm sure Alex is not lying.
I don't think he's lying.
All right. Well, I'm going to go like try to fuck up some ants in my...
Again, patience is a virtue with this.
What should I buy? Like, what trap should I buy? Should I go to like the hardware store? Should I go to like CVS? Like,
where I ordered them on Amazon.
I ordered some too, but they're not coming till tomorrow. I want to put some extra ones out.
Okay,
today.
I think if you go to like a
I have some out, but they don't think.
Don't go to a CVS. Is that what you said?
Yeah.
No. You got to go to like a home care store. What are those
like Home Depot or something?
I don't know if that's like, can you get it at Home Depot? I don't know, maybe Target, like, but I would Google it. I would go into the computer machine and I would Google where can I buy ant traps, and then go to that place, say, excuse me, where are your ant traps? They'll look at you with revulsion, and then they'll say, okay, go over there, but don't touch anyone or anything. You go over there, you get the ant traps, and then you go to the checkout counter, and you've got your pile of ant traps, and you hand them to the person, and you say, please, what do I do now? And then they grab them from you, and they say, please just don't touch me. And then they will scan them, and then that will reveal a price of some sort.
Okay.
And then at that point, you have a choice.
Okay.
You can first just walk away if the price is too much. Mm-hmm. You can... take them and just run.
Okay.
You can take out a credit card, swipe that in the machine, because there's going to be a machine next to it.
Okay.
That is likely to have the price on it also revealed, and you can swipe it there.
This is very helpful.
Or you can take out some bills. You know, like the things that have the numbers on them, the ones.
Yeah,
the
twos, Monopoly with those.
The fives, the tens, colors. The fifties, the twenties, the hundreds. However many of those. Do $1 more than that. That's the price. Do $1 more than that. And then she or he is going to give you back some coins, some coinage. And then you put that in your pocket. Make sure you don't leave the ant traps there.
Take them with you.
You got to take them with you because you have now, what this is called is you have now paid for that.
They don't install them for you?
Correct.
Okay.
Exactly. And then you go get in your car, operate it correctly back to your house. And then put the ant traps where they're supposed to be designated and then leave them there.
Makes sense.
Okay.
All right.
Feel good about that?
Yeah.
Great.
So money can be exchanged for goods and services.
Money can be exchanged for goods and services. If you take nothing else from this podcast, take that your money can be used to purchase things that can then be used by you for other tasks.
Right. Your money can be used to buy notoriety on our podcast in the form of super chats.
That's true.
Yeah.
Your money can be used for many different purposes.
We will put your name up on the screen. We only had one super chat, but I put it up on the screen from West Texas Mike.
Thank you, West Texas Mike.
He was like, he said his expectations were a little too high. Mm. Yeah. Because we were talking about killing ants at the top of the national championship show, but that's literally.
And then we talked about how to perform a transaction at a store.
Yeah. I mean, this is very important. Informative, like people are learning. You're getting smarter by.
I wouldn't go that far. No.
Oh, Amy says David explaining how capitalism works.
I mean, that's not capitalism.
David hates capitalism.
That's how a purchase works. We have two likes on this show. Where are you, people? What's going on?
No, we got like 23 likes. I'm showing.
Why is it only saying three on mine?
I don't know. You're kind of behind.
Wow. Okay.
I'm seeing chat rate was that, but yeah. Thanks for the likes. Thanks for watching. Thanks for being with us for is this 9 years now?
Our 10-year anniversary of this stupid show is going to be sometime in middle of next year. This year, middle of this year. No, middle of next year, 2015.
Okay.
Yeah.
10-year anniversary. That would be pretty cool. It's going to be a little different.
We'll have to do a show with like top hats on and tuxedos.
I like that.
Yeah.
No, that's great. Yeah. You'll dress up. I don't mind dressing up every once in a while.
Yeah. We can wear tuxes.
You seem like you don't like it.
No.
You like it? Too?
Yeah, I'll throw on a suit.
Okay.
Yeah.
You look just, it's different in a suit sometimes. You know, people
yeah,
are like, oh.
No, yeah, everyone's just like, I would, like, if I had a job where I wore a suit every single day, I'd be okay with that.
You would?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't think I would.
No, I'd be totally okay with that.
I think it's more like a special occasion thing.
I like having a uniform. I like just, you know, that's the thing I wear.
That's why the Carhartt shirts.
It's very simple to think about. Like, oh, okay, I don't have to think about this at all.
I have so many, like, 247 t-shirts. I mostly wear those on the show. Today, like, I got Smackfest on today, so if you play beach volleyball in the South Bay, you know what I'm talking about. But I'm kind of a t-shirt and shorts kind of person most of the time. Oh, it's a little chilly now.
It is.
You were like bundled up.
I was. I had to put on a coat.
I was running late, so I only came in the t-shirt.
Yeah, and the wind was billowing through here, through the hallways of the storage facility that you have an office in.
I do have an office in the storage facility. If you come here at night...
Yeah, it's not.
It seems like there could be very murdery, I guess. Is that a
How
word?
Many bodies currently are in the storage units?
Okay, there's a lot of storage units. A lot of them don't get used. Some of them smell bad. I'm assuming...
Between three and five, right?
I was going to go three. Yeah, that's probably three bodies. Yeah. Like, up to five
Well,
parts,
and then you just have
parts.
A pit of water behind this place. Like, how many bodies are in that pit of water?
There could be. That's the so right behind us, like right behind me, is like a Southern California Edison like auxiliary plant that they've hardly ever used. It's basically like an overflow plant, but it's like waterfront property with horrible smokestacks that everybody hates. And it never even gets used. I think they have decided that they're going to knock it down. People want to develop, like, if you could develop the land, it would, like, be billions
They're going to find, when they develop it, they're going to find 14 bodies.
Yeah, it's going to be one of those things. A lot of bodies there.
Yeah.
But it's going to take forever. Like, it'll be, like, all the environmental stuff to, like, it's going to take a long time. But eventually, maybe, I probably won't even be alive by the time they fix all that. But you can't see it because there's a big window behind me and then the power plant. Great view. But you can see the ocean. We can see the ocean from my office, which is kind of cool. But mostly you see this huge power plant.
Yeah.
So.
Can't win them all.
No. All right. Well, we'll keep going on. That's going to wrap things up. I'm Ryan Abraham. That is David Woods. And we are still the podcast of champions, talking all things formerly Pac-12 football. Hope you guys enjoy the show. And we will talk to you next time.
Goodbye.